Closure, Epilogue, Part 1, June 19th, 2022. My epigraph is from a song by Harry Nilsson. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banging off the northeast wind, sailing on a summer breeze. Skimming over the ocean like a stone. This morning, I finally completed a full draft of this piece. I was certain it was done, aside from my chronic proofreading and tinkering. I should know better. No matter how finished an essay or book seems to me, it always at this stage has a previously hidden chapter it is waiting to divulge. While I was taking a bath today, I listened to one of my favorite cover albums, My Blue Heaven, an assortment of mostly big band era songs, my favorite genre, I recorded a couple of years ago. It's so soft, so gentle, so sweet. To me, it is so me. Not the me's that everyone else meets and knows in the public arena, the persona that have been bent and folded and stapled by all the cultural and social forces that bend and fold and staple everyone, family, church, school, work, etc. I like that guy most of the time, and many others do as well. But he is not me. A few days ago, the friend I've been conversing with throughout here said she went back and listened to one of the CDs I sent her a while ago. What she noticed this time was how different my singing voice is from my speaking voice. So gentle and sweet by comparison, she said. I've written a number of times that I've never sung in front of anyone except Carol. There are reasons for that. One is the sense of vulnerability I feel in that mode. What is genuinely and truly in my heart being given voice, the most sensitive an expressive extension of my inner world. So, when I record my singing, I am always alone. I sing and listen until all my everyday voices, the ones everyone else knows, are quieted enough to let that other voice begin to emerge. While I'm singing with that voice, I feel fully free. Like I hardly exist as an embodied person any longer, just a completely relaxed presence that issues forth its inner truth via those vibrations, a resistanceless conduit for what I most deeply feel. For others to hear, yes, if they have ears for it, but even more so for myself, so I can hear it over and over, each time as if it's the first. It's magical, the ultimate reflexive process. What's most pressing in my heart at that moment expressed so the rest of me can come to know what's true about it by listening to my own voice singing it back to me. A perfect hermeneutic circle. Very few others I know are going to listen to that voice quite that way, being more concerned with the quality of the performance, which is not professional by any means, or the degree to which it matches or doesn't their pre-existent musical tastes, and the audience for the kind of music I most prefer, the kind that suits both my voice and my inner spirit, is very small these days. My brother Joe was the first one who did listen that way. From the very first CD I sent him 7 years ago when I started all of this, just enthralled. He said that what he heard made him know and love me more. I was so grateful for that, and his saying it made me know and love him more too. He was in the early stages of what turned out to be a long and devastating battle with ALS, which he lost last year. I must have sent him 30-some CDs in that interim, original albums with songs I wrote myself, dozens of cover albums of every conceivable type of music. He loved them all and told me about it with enthusiasm, with gratitude. Just amazing. What he considered my gifts to him turned out to be his much more consequential gifts to me. It is so hard, often painful, not to be seen in this world. To do that for someone else, to see them, to know them, even once, let alone 30 times, can be life-altering. When my friend said what she said the other day, I was deeply moved and similarly grateful. I will say again what I've said multiple times. If you want to know the inner me, the me I am most incapable of revealing socially in the presence of others, for temperamental reasons, yes, but also for all the obvious cultural reasons I am writing about in this essay, listen to me sing. I mean, really listen. Not to judge how good it is. Not to hear just what you prefer to hear, but to hear me, the real me, the one who longs and loves. If, like my brother, you come to love me more on that basis, I will sound more and more like that when we talk. And in time, if you listen well and long enough, my real voice, that sweet and gentle one, my singing voice, may someday arise calmly and confidently in your presence, as it did for no one else but Carol, until she passed. Epilogue Part 2, June 20th, 5:34 a.m. My epigraph here is a stanza from one of Willie Nelson's songs. Already I've reached Mount Peaks and I've just begun to climb. I'll get over you by clinging to those healing hands of time. One of the wonderful things about life is that no matter how high we climb, and I've done some of that, the summit is always ineluctably up there, vanishingly tantalizing. Most often, the one we see turns out to be a false one, and the real one may simply be a figment we imagine to keep time alive, so it will arrive at just the right moments to lend its healing hands when obstacles seem insuperable. I sometimes feel sorry for those climbers who spend so much money and time and energy to reach the summit of Mount Everest and then get there. What, I wonder, is left for them after that? Nothing higher on this earth left to climb toward. I just woke from a most gorgeous dream. I was living in a second-floor apartment that overlooked the sea. I mean, the sea was right there, 25 feet beneath the large back window I was standing at, which was wide open, 10 feet by 10 feet, more like a porch, I guess, than a window. You could jump from that spot into 20 feet of water, crystal clear enough to see everything right down to the seafloor. At that moment, many thousands of small torpedo-shaped fish were swimming about like a very loose bait ball, each one about 6 inches long. I was thinking, it might be a perfect place for a whale to come and feed, though I never in my wildest dreams imagined that one might happen by. Right then, a huge whale, black with white streaks, breached, rising up right in front of me, inches from my face. It was 30 feet out of the water at the apex of its leap, maybe a third of its body still submerged. For a few seconds, its eye was looking directly into mine, into me, all the way to my soul, it seemed, which was visible to it through something like the crystal clear water it had just leapt from. And I was looking back, same way, same effect. It was breathtaking, both of us stunned, but without a shred of fear. I'm going to assume that this dream, the first worthily memorable one I've had in weeks, has some connection to what I was writing about last night. That paragraph about being seen which I left hanging, almost like that whale in midair, unable to come up with a good closure for this essay on closure. If there is some connection, it is the first time in my life, as best I can recall, that my writing produced a vivid dream entirely on its own, without my asking, rather than vice versa. So let's just say this dream has something to do with seeing and being seen. Certainly a plausible, even a likely reading of it. What might that be? I guess it depends on whether you imagine yourself as the one waiting at the window or as the whale, both of which are seeing and being seen, the former a routine experience and broadly representative, the latter extraordinary, almost unique. I do not have an either-or kind of mind, as you know if you read my work, so I'm not going to either-or this one either. And I'll skip the tortuous intermediate steps that will likely get me lost in Jesuitical mazes, in any case, trying to parse out an argument. My bottom line, clunky as it might be, is this. Sometimes, most often, I suppose, we're the ones standing at the window, waiting, hoping to be seen. Then suddenly, unexpectedly, astonishingly, out of the blue, a huge whale rises up out of nowhere, does see us, who we are, where we live, all of it, truly, and we are stunned by the beauty of that moment. This may happen only rarely in our lifetime of waiting, but when it does, everything changes. We may also, from time to time, be that whale, rising up out of the blue to see, to truly see, outside in, someone waiting at their window, hoping against hope to be seen, stunning them by the beauty of that moment. This we can do, I truly believe, any time we want, with whomever is near us, though we generally don't. And sometimes we are both, the waiter and the whale, our inner self seeing itself again, both in here and out there, as if for the first time, stunned by the beauty of that moment. These latter special moments, in my experience, tend to arise serendipitously, like the ones I describe above, though I'm quite sure we can increase their frequency by slowing down and paying full attention to what is right in front of us, calling us. The wonderful thing about all these permutations is that the one seeing is also always being seen, truly and deeply, either self and other, or self and self. Two, becoming one, similarly stunned into communion by the beauty of that moment. So, if you're standing by that window waiting, don't feel forsaken. A whale may well be on the way to leap up and see you. Maybe it's me. In the meantime, while you're waiting, when you can, just be the damn whale for God's sake, for as many others as you can. Go out and look for someone waiting at a window and leap up to see them. It's not that hard. Others are sending out clear signals all the time about how best to see them truly. Pay attention. Believe them. The rewards will be immense for both of you. When you get into that habit, it becomes much easier to wait by your own window, patiently, happily alone, and full of hope. And it's far more likely that the whale you're waiting for will happen by, even if it's that other you who truly yearns to know who you are and where you live, leaping up to see you eye to eye, the real you, the one you most want to be seen. And maybe, if you get to know one another really, really well, it will even hang around for a while, as it always does for me when I'm alone in my sunroom, mouth to microphone, to sing you a beautiful song in its own sweet, gentle voice, and to listen to your sweet, gentle voice singing back. Time coming to a full stop for both of you. Momentarily enveloped in a mutually welcoming aura of selfless love.